Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. This is the Mail Report for September 2011 for the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers. This is a month I've been waiting for a little bit because we've got the new 52 from DC, and I think that's a bit of a game changer of sorts and very much a kind of a historic month, although I'm starting to think next month could be more interesting. DC Comics had the top percentage of the total units for the top 300 comics. This, frankly, does not happen that often. It's happened like five times out of the last 104 months, so kind of a very rare thing for it to do it. And this was, I think, by far the widest margin in DC's favor, because typically it's like a percent or two or three difference between them and Marvel. This time it was nearly an 8% gap. So DC did really well this month. I don't think that's a huge surprise to people. Interestingly, this is not the most units DC has sold in a month during the Final Order era. Final Order era started in March 2003. That's when Diamond started releasing orders or information based on not pre-orders that stores had made, but what stores actually were invoiced for the month. Prior to that, it was, again, like I said, based on pre-orders, so you could say, I'm going to come out with this, stores would order tons of it, and then you just never come out with it, but you still placed high on the list. This shifted it to where the only things that could place on the list had to actually, I don't know, be published and see, you know, the point-of-sales stuff at the store, which I think is great. But that's kind of why I limit how far back I go to that March 2003. Second highest number of units. It is the highest number of dollars, however, for DC for a month. The previous month that was really good for DC was, unsurprisingly, May 2006. That was around the time of 1 year later of 52... And it was just a really strong month for DC. They had, at that month, 3,434,132 units, compared to this month, where they had 3,387,321 units. So really, not that big of a difference between those 2 months. That equated to, dollar-wise, though, for DC back then, $10,374,020-ish dollars. It's actually $20.81, compared to the $10,435,511.79 this month. So, again, not that huge of a difference, and the fact they had more dollars now than then and more units then than now is a reflection of just the difference of cover price. But this was a great month for DC.
The interesting part to me, too, is that, you know, they came in first in both units and dollars, selling 68 items to Marvel's 103 items.
That's what I was just about to get to, yes.
I was reading your mind over the miles.
Exactly. Not only was it a great month, they did it with a very efficient number of units. You know, they had 65 new items, 3 reorder items for that total you mentioned of 68 items. Whereas Marvel had 97 new items on the list, 6 reorder items for a total of 103, had, you know, fewer dollars, fewer units, about a half a million units fewer and stuff, to come in at 38.63% of the total unit sales for the top 300, 41.07% of the total dollars for the top 300, compared to the 42.47% of the total dollars for the top 300 for DC. So DC had a fairly commanding lead by units, a lead by dollars, not so commanding. But really, when you start to divide it out by the number of items on the list and stuff, DC dominated. it was on average, you take the total units divided by the total items and average all that out and stuff, 49,814 units compared to Marvel's average of 27,266 units. So huge, huge difference there. Whether DC can repeat this or not, particularly long term, going to be very, very interesting to find out. Certainly Marvel was doing kind of on par with how it had been. It's not like Marvel had a sudden downturn or something. They've been typically doing around the 10 million mark or whatever dollar-wise. Matter of fact, this month they were actually up about $160 from last month. Really not that big of a change for them. Unit-wise, they were down about 30,000 units, 35,000 units or something. So not that different from how they tend to do.
So pretty much, in the large scheme of things, pretty much flat with last month.
Pretty much, pretty much. So the fact that DC came out on top is not a matter of, well, it was a bad month for Marvel, but just it really is indicative of a strong month for DC. You know, this is, again, the second highest number of units DC has had, so very close to their maximum value in terms of units, whereas for Marvel, this was actually about 200,000 units below their average, and far from their maximum number of units they've done in a month. So I think this is something that is indicative of a successful relaunch, at least in terms of the number ones and stuff for DC. Whether the relaunch in and of itself is successful is a bigger picture item that we'll certainly get increased visibility to over the months, but it's going to be a year or two before it's really clear if this long-term paid off or not. But initially, I think they have had quite a bit of success. And what really has me excited about next month's numbers is, you know, I'm going through the shipping list every week as we're picking what we're going to do for the weekly comic spotlight. And I'm sure you've noticed this too the last couple of weeks, Bob. Every issue number two we're seeing, there's a reprint of a number one or second printing or what, or third printing in some cases. You know, yeah. So there's just a lot of reorder activity happening for the DC stuff. All the number ones we're seeing on the list this time, and there are all 52, of course, even though one of them shipped in August initially, so we had strong reorder activity for it. All of those have a good chance of showing up closer to the bottom of the list, of course, next month, but next month.
I'm curious on, and I guess maybe some stores just really didn't order very many of the first issues, but on the top-selling ones, you know, like when we get to talking about the top-selling comics, when I go to my local shop on Wednesday, you know, all the ones that are up here in the top 20 where they've got, you know, DC's got like 17 of the top 20 slots, those, the first issues pretty much sold out. And it's nice to see the fact that DC is shipping the number one reprints, you know, second printing, whatever's, at the same time, because I think it's going to help, because you got a number two issue and then the number one issue is available also. And if someone said, oh, I heard good things about this, oh, I don't want to get the number two if I don't have the number one. Oh, well, the number one's right there. I can pick it up.
One of the things Brian Hibbs mentioned in one of his last two columns, which I've only had time to skim, I haven't actually given them the proper reading they deserve, is he has mentioned that, I believe it was Justice League number one, he was always able to keep that on his shelf. In other words, the availability through reorders and stuff was always there. There was never a point at which he couldn't sell it to somebody. That, in and of itself, is a huge sign of success for DC, and something they should get huge kudos for, because if they have been able to keep these issues flowing to the retailers as fast as the retailers need them and want them, that is what's going to benefit them in the long term. Because like you said, every time they see an issue two or whatever, issue one's right there, even before the two got out or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's never a comeback later situation.
But, you know, for the ones that are a little farther down the list, on those, you know, even though they've gone to second printings on everything, I have not seen, I mean, I see first prints still available, at least in my shop, of some of these books here. You know, it, it, there doesn't seem to be a shortage of first printings of Suicide Squad, Deathstroke, Savage Hawkman, Batwing, Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, etc. You know, there's a variety of these ones where, you know, sure, there's a second printing, but there's still first printings available for sale at least somewhere. Whereas a lot of these other ones, I don't really see first printings available. So it's great that there's second printings because people will, you know, that want it will buy the second printing. But you see what I'm getting at is that there's certain ones that they're going to second printing, but who's going to buy them?
You know? Well, I don't think who's going to buy them because I think there are going to be some people that, you know, I know the couple of the stores here were having problems. I mean, we had one of the listeners say he couldn't get all the first issues at one of the stores.
Right.
You know, so that means if they could get second printings, they'd sell at that store.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there are certain stores that just didn't believe or didn't order enough or they
didn't have the cash
their orders
flow.
Because they didn't have the cash flow or they didn't, I guess, feel like they could take advantage of the returnability or, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't get enough copies of the number one. So that's a fair point.
But what you bring up, I think, about the number twos and how saturated or how not saturated, but what penetration they're going to have into the market, that goes back to something Brian Hibbs had asked for, I'm going to say 10, 20 years ago, of it would be great for every item on the top 300 that Diamond gives us to know, hey, out of X stores, it made it into X, you know, or, you know, out of either the percentage of stores it made it into, or I'd actually like to know, out of the, you know, this month we had, you know, 3,000 outlets, it made it into all 3,000, or it made it into two, you know, because that would tell us almost the percentage of what stores were able to fill their need with those first printings versus are most stores needing these second printings. And really, when we get to next month, the possibility that DC could have 104 items just from the new 52, I find fascinating. I really was not thinking going in that October could be the really big month for DC. But I also don't think I really accounted for the returnability aspect in my initial thoughts as to how it was going to go. Because all but 8 of the items for DC out of the 52, new 52 items, are returnable. So they're being reported at reduced numbers. And we talked about some of this when we did kind of a preview of some of this information on that publisher spotlight for that fourth week of the new 52 books. And what that means is we could have seen all but those 8 that are non-returnable and stuff, those other ones on the list next month, just compensating for the fact, hey, there weren't really that many returns. Now, add to that the fact that there's all this reorder activity and this demand for second printings and third printings in some cases. I mean, they've gone back to print on every one of the 52 number ones. And typically, I'd be sitting here saying, well, you know, that's the print to order. They know the orders before they set the print run. They could manufacture that. Well, yeah, they could. But again, they've made it returnable. They've got alternate covers and variant covers and incentive covers and stuff on the other 8 or whatever. DC has really stood behind and supported the relaunch very, very strongly, well beyond any reasonable expectation. So to then expect them on top of the returnability and all that to be doing all these overprintings and stuff versus, hey, let's wait to see if there's a demand and then go back to print. I think they made the right choice. I think the fact they went back to print, have been able to keep the issues flowing, the copies flowing and stuff like that, I support the decisions they made, you know, whatever specifically they may have been, that got them to this point. They filled the initial needs. Nobody was allocated. Nobody was, as far as I know, really upset with that. So they met the initial orders. Nobody has been waiting for stuff to go through the pipeline to get to them.
Yeah, some people might have upped their orders a little late in the game when they saw how things were taking off, you know.
But that would have been after the final order cutoff
exactly,
date.
Exactly.
So it'd be an advanced reorder even. But it sounds like even those have gotten through the pipeline surprisingly fast. So I really don't think anyone has grounds to be criticizing DC on this, nor have I heard any criticisms of DC on this. You know, for Brian Hibbs, who's a fairly outspoken retailer, to basically say, hey, I've always had a copy of Justice League to sell, or whichever it was, you know, to me, I think is, I don't want to say, you know, uber high praise, but I mean, he's somebody who'd be pretty quick to say, hey, they dropped the ball on this, and would have been right to say so if it had taken a while for the second and third printings to get out there. But they seem to be coming lockstep with those second issues, which goes to your point of second issue comes out, their store is guaranteed to have the availability of the first issue there should the store have seen the need for it. You know, so I think it's really amazing, I think, how successful this has been. We've got a number of items. We've got, six items over 100,000 units and stuff this month. These are, you know, some of the higher selling items for the year, because it's been a fairly weak year. I mean, if we start looking at the top 300, I mean, the items at the top of the list, Batman, Action Comics, Green Lantern, should not really be surprising anybody. You know, Flash is at rank number 4, followed by Superman, then Detective Comics, then Batman The Dark Knight. All of which, except for that Batman The Dark Knight, sold over that 100,000. Superman, Detective, and Batman The Dark Knight are returnable, so those were reported at reduced levels. So those could actually, you know, when it all comes out in the wash over the reorders in a couple of months and stuff, we'll see how that goes. Now, the way the returnability is working is they had to order a certain level. I think they had to match maybe their May sales or something like that. It was some arcane math to figure out what they could return up to or what their returnable amount was. They had to pay 20 cents for the comics they returned, send the cover back, get an affidavit of signing, they destroyed the rest. Or, you know, again, there was some logistics to do. And that took place 30 days after they got the issue, I think. So it's not a, hey, we couldn't sell it the first week, we're giving it back. They essentially had to keep it on their rack, or at least at their store, and if it's at their store, why not on the rack, for 30 days, which would be about the time the next issue comes out. And so I think the way they thought through that plan made sense and is working out for them. Now, initially, it was only going to be for the first 3 or 4 months. They have extended that program until April 2012, and for the January-April section of that, the orders have to equal the orders of issue 3 to be returnable, I believe. So they're basically saying, hey, we expect a little bit of an adjustment period, but once you know those third issues and stuff, if you maintain that level and it doesn't sell, we'll stand behind that. Mm-hmm. And I am just really blown away in a very positive way of how strongly DC is standing behind this relaunch. They are not asking retailers to shoulder any unreasonable burden. As a matter of fact, I think DC is taking on the brunt of the risk to an amazing degree. Given how traditionally comics have been sold, I'm going to go point at Marvel in this case, where often we get these classified solicitations. The retailers have no idea really what they're ordering sometimes, and sometimes they'll even swap out the contents of the issue between the solicitation and when it ships. I mean, that's kind of bad business practices. DC is going so far in very positive, beneficial business practices and treating the retailers with a lot of respect and consideration on this for what could have been an incredibly risky, nerve-wracking experience for the retailers. And you know, really, anyone who isn't highly appreciative of that, I think they really ought to be, whether they read DC Comics or not. This is the kind of move that, if it had gone poorly, could have really devastated the comic book industry. So I'm pleased with how it's going. And really, you look at the Batman sales, 188,420 estimated units. Those are really, really strong. I'm not going to say they're sustainable at that level, but strong numbers to go out with. Action Comics number 1, 182,748 units. Green Lantern number 1, 141,628 units. Flash number 1, 129,260 units. Superman number 1, 118,376 units. Detective Comics number 1, 103,392 units.
Yeah, and so, the majority of that is not with any of the reorders taken into account, you know, so...
Well, in the last two, the Superman and Detective there are with returnability factoring in downwards.
Right.
So, really anything that they were able to reorder and get inside of September, which could have accounted on like Action Comics and stuff, would be included in this. Any reorders that got invoiced and got to the store in October will be in next month's numbers. So really, the way this list is structured is kind of skewed in favor of items shipping earlier in the month, and it also makes doing certain aggregate month-to-month comparisons tricky, since some weeks have 4 months, or some months have 4 weeks, some months have five. But what's interesting is you know, that rank 7, Batman the Dark Knight, 98,389 units. So just a little under the 100,000 mark. It is returnable easily. Just the return ability not coming into play could knock it up to the 100,000 mark very, very easily. Once you factor in reorders, a lot of these lower ones could be there too. But that's the first 7 slots. DC had all of them. I mean, that right there, huge, huge success. Like you said, they had, what, 17 of the top 20. Yeah. Great, great month for them. Now, the highest selling one for DC is at rank 8 with Fear Itself number 6, 93,032 units. Now, that's actually up about 2.32% from the previous issue. It's about 2,100 unit gain thereabouts.
How common is that? That was one that I looked at and it was kind of like, that's kind of weird when you see like an issue 6 of an event miniseries going up like that.
I would have to see if issue 5 had multiple covers, because issue 6 did. There are a number of things they can do to be kind of goosing the numbers on this and kind of bumping it up. But for this, I think it comes down to specifically what were people thinking were going to happen and what issue and, you know, some stuff like that. It could just, even if 5 had variant covers, how many and who did which.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, it's not that common for an upward thing in general. For these event series, it's hard to say what's common, what's not, because each one is a little bit unique in and of itself. Ring number 9, though, we got Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, the new first issue for that relaunched series. That's what the third relaunch they've done, or third launch they've done, and the Ultimate Comics version, then they went back to the old numbering. I mean, the numbering gymnastics on this are ridiculous.
I would say that that's actually pretty low for a number one.
The 87,237? Oh, yeah. Particularly for a high-profile launch of a new Spider-Man.
I mean, there was, like, news articles on it. And I mean, I guess those came with, you know, Miles Morales being introduced in, what was the Ultimate Fallout or something like that. But still, I mean, this was, like, still something that there was some buzz about, and it was bagged and, you know, the whole thing, like they've been doing with all their Ultimate number ones. They've been bagging them all.
Oh, yeah. I certainly think expecting this to have done over 100,000 would not have been unrealistic expectations. However, if you look down at rank 35, we've got the second issue of the same series, 52,569 units. That's nearly a 40% drop. It's a 39.74% drop. It lost 34,668 estimated units.
Is that like coming out bi-weekly? Or, I mean, I'm not buying the Ultimate books. I mean, is that coming out?
Yeah, it's every other week for those two. And I think it's every other week after, because I've already gotten the third issue. Matter of fact, I just got that. So that would be, it's at least going twice a month. I'd have to look at
the solicitation.
Maybe
they're trying to push out that 6-issue arc that probably is going to drag its way out to getting him in his costume, you know, in 3 months instead of in 6 months.
Yeah. But still, a 40% drop on a second issue. I mean, the average second issue sells about 80% of the first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for this one to be selling closer to 60, you know, it's kind of dragging that average down. But we're seeing a lot of that. One of the other ones we saw this month over from Marvel was down at rank 221, second issue of the Mystic miniseries, the third of the cross-gen kind of relaunches or retoolings. And it was at 7,105 units compared to the first issue, which had 18,784 units. That's a 62.18% drop. And this is something that, given we've already seen the relaunches of Ruse and what was the other one? I'm blanking on the other one. Help me out here.
Sigil.
Ruse and Sigil, both of which the trades came out this month, by the way. Given that those come out, I don't think anyone should have been hideously surprised. I mean, that was going to be getting this. They knew it was cross-gen, but not the old cross-gen. I mean, you know what I mean? This kind of a 62% drop seems really wild.
I'm not expecting to see them relaunching a lot more cross-gen series.
Well, particularly if you look at how the sales did for the trades. The Ruse trade did 2,924 units. The Sigil trade, 1,833 units. It's not like the trades are doing gangbusters to compensate for how the comics are doing. I would be very surprised if we see another cross-gen relaunch, and if they do another one, and I personally kind of hope they do, they really need to pick carefully the property, the take on it, and the creative team. If they were to do maybe Way of the Rat or Sojourn, kind of keep as close to the original tone and style, those might do okay. Beyond that, I'd be hard-pressed to name what I would even try to do.
Interestingly, I mean, the one that was relatively close to the original seems to have sold the best.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think I'm totally pulling this out of thin air, but, you know, it's because none of them sold tremendously. You know, so people who were fondly remembering the cross-gen stuff were buying the one that was relatively close to the cross-gen stuff, and the stuff that was like some completely new take, the people who like the cross-gen aren't that interested, like myself. And it seems like people who didn't read the cross-gen stuff, they're not interested in any of them. So.
Well, and it comes down to how much of that mentality may be coming into play, if any, with the new DC relaunch. Of people who'd been liking what had gone before, are they going to like the new takes, or is that going to be off-putting to them? And some people are going to like everything. Some people are going to dislike other things. I mean, there's such a cross-section out there. It comes down to which is the plurality. You know, are more people going to like the new take on Firestorm, the Nuclear Men, plural, than like the old Firestorm stuff? You know, and are the people who like the old Firestorm stuff going to like the new stuff enough to stay with it or not? And how does all that play out?
I'm going to be curious because there's a tremendous amount of shifting around behind the scenes going on some of these DC books, creative-wise. You know, like artists getting pulled off, writers being reassigned and all that. I'm just wondering how much of an effect that's going to have, because people gave the first issues a try. Are they going to give them a try again with a new creative team on issue 4? I mean, if it was not just the people leaving, like Gail Simone, I read, she's already bowed out of the Firestorm book.
Really?
You know, I think J.T. Krull is pulled off of Green Arrow. Well, it's more like he chose to, but you know, and you know, they're moving the deck chairs around on the ones that are not at the top a lot, it seems.
Yeah. Well, going forward, I'm planning on using 3.2 million units as the benchmark for the DC Universe. Why that number? Well, if you total up the sales for all the new 52 number ones that came out in September, which is all of them except Justice League, even though it had 46,650 units of reorder activity, if you ignore that and total the other 51 number ones up, you get 3,199,096 units. I'm going to round up, actually, about 904 units, given I'm not counting the 46,650 reorder item activity for Justice League or the 100-some-odd thousand it had gotten last month. I think that's fair. So, 3.2 million is going to be the benchmark I'm using for how the DC Universe needs to kind of measure up to this initial launch. Now, again, that gives them the benefit of the Justice League series, which is one of the, I think it would have ranked third this month if you had added in how it did last month. It gives them the advantage of the miniseries like Huntress, Penguin, Shade, My Greatest Adventure, the Legion Secret Origins that's coming up, all of those things to kind of compensate for whatever losses they've got. Plus, there's the whole returnability thing. And it's going to be very interesting to see as they're kind of shifting stuff around creatively, as things are coming out a bit more and people have more of a chance to really, do they like this? I mean, I think after the first issue, most people had pretty much decided those that were clearly on their list or off their list. It's a question of how big is that gray area of, well, I need a little more time to figure out. And how quickly does that shake out? But going forward, do I expect DC to hit this 3.2 million mark? Honestly, no. If they do, huge, huge win to them. They've only had that many units sell in total in a month twice, and this was one of them. May 2006 was the other. That was, again, the launch of 52, around the time of 1 year later, all that stuff. So this is definitely a high bar for them to reach, but I don't think it's completely unreasonable, because frankly, I think some of these, given the reorder activity we're seeing, Demon Knights being an example, potentially undersold. But it's going to be very interesting to see, again, how are people going to, well, gee, I gave up on this, but ooh, they're putting a new writer on it. Within the first couple of issues? I don't really think people are going to have that short of a memory and come back that quickly to give it another shot.
I know I'm not. I mean, it might be the case that if I hear you or other people telling me, wow, it's such night and day difference, you know, you really need to check this out, you know, let me know. I mean, on any of these ones that you know I dropped and they're like switching up the creative teams, you know, if you read the issue in a week, you know, let me know and I can, you know, go out to the store and try to pick it up and give it a try. But in general, I'm not going to be ordering these things on speculation of that kind of stuff. It's just like, you know, they had their shot. One would assume that they put their, what they felt to be their best and brightest on these things, you know, and
I think they did a good job picking
in general,
creators,
you know,
by and large.
Yeah.
I think where they, in hindsight, should have spent more time is, I think before, and this would have taken a year or two back to actually put in place, I would have really, really schooled the editorial staff on really beefing up their expectations and what they would accept and how to communicate down to the creators. Accessibility, naming characters, not doing too decompressed of a story, not doing too compressed of a story either, you know, and focusing more on reworking storytelling expectations.
Yeah, I mean, for me, story, you know, I mean, I had, when we were reviewing, I mean, there were some quibbles here and there about storytelling, but by and large, the thing that made or broke a lot of these for me was just what was the new take on a character. You know, and I kind of don't like the young, hip Green Arrow. You know, I kind of like the old, you know, so putting a new writer on it, as long as it's still that same guy, doesn't matter to me one bit. You know, I'm not interested.
And that's fair. I would question if the problem with Red Lanterns was the take or the fact it was just a boring story.
Yeah, Red Lanterns, maybe. If they switched up the team on Red Lanterns, I could see going back to it. But like things like Green Arrow, Savage Hawkman, what's another one? The Deathstroke, Firestorm being two guys, you know, kind of stuff. I mean, those, it's like kind of the fundamental concept I wasn't that big on. So they'd have to do a pretty major reworking for me to want to try those out again. But Red Lanterns, I could see, you know, because that was more of the just the storytelling as opposed to the concept.
It just feels to me that a lot of the discussions we had going through all 52 of those number ones, there were enough places we're saying there should have been a caption for this, they could have been clearer on this. Would that have made a difference on the ones where you just didn't like the take? Certainly not. However, might some of that cleaned up enough things that those that you were either on the fence on or maybe still on the fence on might have had a better chance?
Yeah.
With something like Blackhawks, which I didn't feel they really firmly established the concept, would that have done better? So it's something that it's having gone this deep into the relaunch well, this strongly and stuff, it's going to be hard for DC to reposition some stuff. I think they're going to stay the course for a while on some of this right or wrong, and I think they almost have to, Because if they were to say, you know, this was the wrong take for whichever character, team, or title, and you know, take a sharp left turn, that would certainly put me off. It's like pick something and stick with it, right or wrong, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you got to give it a certain amount, and that's the one thing that was just a little surprising to me, that, you know, there's so many creative changes happening after, you know, two or three issues, as opposed to at least letting the story arc get in. Maybe some of them, I don't know when the change is going to actually happen. Maybe it'll happen at the end of the first arc, and it's just, you know, the way the news cycle runs that, you know, we hear about it if you're paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it seems like even when we were reviewing a couple of the number ones like Superman, the fact that Perez had already, you know, been announced as leaving.
Yeah.
That was pretty quick. So it's going to be interesting to really watch this. I'm very excited about next month, where I think DC has a very good chance of breaking that 3.2 million benchmark I'm going to use, particularly if the reorder activity is very strong on this.
And the other part you had mentioned, you know, is just how many indie books are going to take the fall out there, just getting totally shoved off the bottom of the list, because you're going to have a bunch of reorder activity on these number one DC books that is, in many cases, probably stronger than, you know, the 4,000 or 5,000 level, you know, or actually 3,000 to 5,000 level that's usually demarcating the bottom of the list.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it comes down to how much reorder activity is going to be along the lines of what we saw of Justice League number one at the 46,000 unit, and how much is going to be more like what we see at Flashpoint number five at the 5,000 unit-ish mark. And it was really 4,972 units. But it, a lot of things near the bottom of the list we may lose visibility into next month for that month. But, you know, hey, if that means we get a stronger DC sales base out of this, that's good. And Diamond actually does tend to report, not every month, but on many months, the top either 25 or 50 non-premier publisher titles. So that gives me a little bit more insight some months to things below the top 300. I usually don't include that in the analysis we do, just to kind of keep it at a apples-to-apples number of issues every month. DC has announced, though, or reported that they've sold like 5 million units inside of that six-week initial period for the new 52. Now, that's, I think, outside of Diamond sales. I don't think that includes digital sales, but they're reporting very, very strong sales kind of across the board. Obviously, more so on some titles than others. But it's fun to be watching this. It's going to be interesting, like I said, to see how this shakes out, if we get kind of that usual sales curve or not. I'm expecting really not at this point. But whether we see reduced differences between the first and second issues, or if we see things around the 60% drops we're seeing on some. I believe Brian Hibbs reported on one of his recent columns that, I think it might have been Green Arrow, sales on the second issue were a third of the first, because maybe a lot of other people didn't like that new take either. Mm-hmm. So very very volatile time, very influential time for the comics these days.
Now, would you say that, I mean, this has gone about as good as DC could have hoped for it to have gone as they were planning this relaunch?
Yes and no. I think if they had higher expectations than this, that would... I don't think they should have had higher expectations than this. I think this was very... strong sales, very realistic sales.
Because it certainly could have done worse. I mean, it could have fallen on its backside.
Well, and we've seen it could have done better given how, you know, May 2006 went. Not a whole lot better, but I mean, for this to have been the second highest number of units on the Diamond Top 300 chart for a month, and the highest dollar amount for that, they certainly should not be disappointed with that. But the impression I certainly got when I sat with them, with John Rudin and Bob Wayne in San Diego before Comic-Con, was they're not after that, that, you know, 46.49%, you know, the fact that they got the lion's share of the top 300. That is not a big deal to them. The big deal to them is going to be next month, can they retain these readers? do they have a stronger sales base going forward than they had before? Which is part of why I'm outlining that 3.2 million benchmark I'm going to use. And again, I think that's a high one for them to reach. Could this have gone better? I think it certainly could have. Could it have gone worse? Oh, certainly, certainly. This could have been a colossal disaster. It could have been that people looked at this new Aquaman and said, this is ridiculous, forget it. Or, you know, that the buzz could have been very negative. There has been some outcry about, you know, Red Hood and the Outlaws or Catwoman or whatever. But by and large, the impression I'm getting is this is being well received. This has also positioned DC very favorably, I think, in terms of how they're standing behind the stuff, the quality of what they're coming out with, the fact they didn't completely cut the continuity off at the knees, although there's some legitimate debate about that. I think, though, in a perfect world, they could have completely got the top 25, possibly the top 50. If they had come out with a couple of more stellar superstars or whatever, you know, it would have been hard to do. But in a perfect world, I mean, they could have done better, but I think it would have been really hard for them to do that. To beat out something like A Fear Itself, the relaunch of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man would not have been easy. But really, once you get past those two and Amazing Spider-Man 669, which is at rank, I think, 18 with 71,944 units, the next highest thing Marvel had on the list was Ultimate Comics X-Men number 1, 62,080 units, followed by Avengers 17, 61,492 units. Everything else, below 59,000 units. So, while Marvel is doing average, again, they had so many titles that they're top of their list, really weak. When you only have a handful of items over 60,000, whereas they used to have stuff routinely in the 90,000, 100,000 area, you know, specifically the Avengers franchise. So, given that, had they come out with something that both seemed more marketable and was more marketable on some of those lower-selling titles, they could have done better. I think there was a lot more, gee, is this new Superboy going to be any good before the thing than is it any good now that it's out? It may not be to everybody's liking, but I don't think people are arguing on the quality of the material. So it's, for a starting point, I think they should be qualifying this as a success. Certainly the fact they sold out of everything and have gone back to print, that to me, for the number ones, successful. But proof is in the pudding, can they maintain sales? If they cannot, we're quickly going to get back into the ballpark sales-wise we were in before. And that is going to be a very unfortunate situation. They cannot go back to this sort of a relaunch too many more times. Now they could try let's do a yearly new season kind of TV metaphor thing, but man, that would be a really dangerous game to play. You know, you look at how some of these number ones are doing for Ultimate Comics and stuff over at Marvel. Number ones, I think, no longer have that guarantee of higher sales.
Well, you know, it's like, you can only go back to the well so many times on that. And, you know, it's just people are now treating them like what they exactly are. You know, it's just another issue. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, you know, the number doesn't matter. The number doesn't matter. I just want to read a story. Well, that's true to some extent, although many more people do try, or at least stores order number ones than other things. But it's getting to the point now where it's just a number one is not even necessarily a jumping on point. It's just another issue.
Well, look at rank 52. We've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 9, number 1. 42,945 units. The number 1 of the quote-unquote Season 8, at least twice that. It may have gotten over 100,000. I'd have to go look. But, you know,
Where did the end of Season 8 finish off, though?
I would have to go dig up. It's not on this spreadsheet.
Because it had certainly fallen from...
Totally. It had gotten down to around that range. I think it was still above 40,000, but it might have been a little below. It was within that ballpark. So they probably got up from where it had ended, but it's not like this number one had anywhere near the power of the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you look at the drop we've got here on Ultimate Comics X-Men number 2 of, you know, nearly a 27% drop and stuff. Even if you do better on that first issue, by the time of that second or that third, are you going to have retained that? It's very much flash in the pan stuff these days. You know, it doesn't have the sticking power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing somebody had mentioned on the forum that I'm glad they did because I found it just very funny. Alpha Flight was initially announced as, I think, a 7-issue series. They added a 0.1 issue, extended it to 8 issues, then said, hey, let's go on going. Now it's canceled as of number 8. We got number 4 here on the list at rank 101, 23,242 units. It's down about 6.5% from the previous issue. Not too bad. But the question, and I forget who posted it on the forum, and I apologize for that. The question they asked is, I mean, it was 53 days ago, apparently, that they made the announcement to go on going. Did they just not do the math right? And I think, I'm going to say, I mean, that's certainly possible and probable. It goes down to, I think they made the announcement too early, because really, that first issue, the number one issue, I should say, excluding the point one issue, let's go chronologically, actually. The point one issue did, I think, 25,774 units, but a lot of people apparently are skipping point one issues. The number one issue did 46,853 units. The number two issue dropped by about 20,000 units to 26,861 units. Almost exactly 20,000 unit drop, give or take 8 issues. Number three down to 24,873 units. Number four to 23,242 units, as I mentioned. So the difference between the number two and the number four, not much. What, 2,500 units? The difference between the number one and the number two of 20,000 units, pretty steep. So I think, given the difference of the 7% drop between four and, compared to issue three and stuff, they simply made the announcement too early, and they should have basically not jumped the gun. Now, Marvel's also just laid off about 15 people, some of which are in the editorial staff, so it may be simply they don't have the bandwidth to be editing that many titles. And things under rank 100 started to be under suspicion of, do we want to keep this or not? Now, if that's the case, other titles below Alpha Flight on the list include, let's see, I'm ignoring point one issues and miniseries. Ghost Rider number 3 is at 22,180 units. Dakin Dark Wolverine, 20,460. Generation Hope, 20,243. That's with issue 11. Daredevil, Man Without Fear, or Most Dangerous Man Alive, or The Guy Who Stole Daredevil's Title, 18,798 units. Wolverine Best There Is, 18,781 units. It used to be you could do a Wolverine thing and you could not go wrong with that. They just have too many Wolverine titles.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like he's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? There's only so many Wolverine titles that, I mean, even the hardcore Wolverine guys can stand, I'm sure.
Oh, what's interesting is further down this, Iron Man 2.0, 15,600 units.
That's canceled also.
Really? What a surprise.
Yeah. Issue 12, which is the end of the first arc, is the last issue. It was like not tagged when it was solicited last month as the last issue. But it wasn't on the solicits. It went up on the web this month, and then there was a story. As, oh, yeah, number 12 was the last issue.
How about Herc? What's its last issue?
It's down at the 15,000 range. I forget. I think like 10 or so. It's gone, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to last. So.
Well, and certainly anything at this, you know, 15,000, 20,000 range, I mean, yeah, it's not really helping. It's not effective to be publishing those things, I think. You know, and you look at some of these Spider Island and Fear Itself miniseries, and man, they're
well. I think that's why they're going with the point one theory and seeing how well they can milk that, right? You know, so Fear Itself, they see the numbers on some of these Fear Itself minis, and one-shots and stuff. So, you know, they want to put out three more Fear Itself one-shots. They're going to be Fear Itself 7.1, 7.2, and 7.3. You know, it's just, will they sell more of them that way than by making them something else? And then they're also going with that 0.1 numbering for that Venom miniseries or crossover, whatever the heck it is, that's coming out. You know, that's going to be, I forget, you know, 13.1 through 13.4 instead of a separate thing. And, you know, one would assume that they're going to try to keep kind of regular Venom numbers on that as opposed to, you know, 10,000 less. But we'll see how long it takes them to devalue that mechanism.
Well, I don't think they have far to go because you look at, let's see, rank 115 is that Black Panther 523, the 18,000, we'll say 800, it's two units below that really. Compare that to rank 126, which is the Black Panther 23.1, which sold 16,592 units. So that's already over 2,200 unit difference with the 0.1 not benefiting from that. You look at Thunderbolts, compare issue 163 to 163.1. You see in this case, let's see, it's 2,400-200 versus 2,200-600-ish. You know, another couple hundred unit gap there with the 0.1, which is cheaper, not doing as well.
Is Marvel even holding up the facade at this point that these 0.1 issues are supposed to be jump-ons? I mean, because they really haven't been for the most, I mean, I haven't read all of them by any stretch of the imagination, but the majority of the ones that I've read have not in any way, shape, or form been a jumping on point.
They've almost all felt like just another issue to me. Maybe at best the start of a story arc, but even the few have felt that way to me. I have been very disappointed with the execution on that. I think the very existence of the 0.1 program is detrimental to sales. I mean, that X-Factor 24.1 did 23,220 units, whereas issue 225 did 23,507 units. 24 did 23,682 units, so really the difference between 24 and 24.1 is only a couple hundred units. I think it sends the wrong signal. Mm-hmm. The you know, don't jump on unless we tell you explicitly it's a good spot. So, and it's funny because I think that's going to come back to haunt DC because all these new 52 number ones, well, clearly a number one should be a jumping on point. Well, now anyone who's missed that, not a big deal right now, bigger deal 6 months from now, bigger deal a year from now, bigger deal 2 years from now. Are they going to feel that they can get into this new continuity, this new universe? Or is it going to have... has the signal been sent so strongly for so long that it's hard to get into a series versus having every issue being a jumping on point?
Mm-hmm.
And again, the 0.1, I think, is just a horrible idea. And that whole Venom 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, the Fear Itself 7.1, 0.2, 0.3, that's just ridiculous. If you feel the problem is the way you are numbering the books, you've missed the point. No pun intended.
Well, I mean, we'll see how it does for them. I mean, you know, they seem like they've got people, like, charging around doing stuff to try to improve the sales. They will try almost anything besides improving the accessibility of the contents, see, unfortunately.
But do we think the problem is the way they're packaging the books? Not that that couldn't be improved. Certainly it could. Or do we think the core problem is something about the contents, the return on the investment, and how people feel about what they actually bought?
Yeah.
It just seems to me that every time they do some of these stunts... Now, don't get me wrong. I like me a good stunt. I'm really looking forward to getting that Legion flight ring that comes with the Legion Secret Origins.
The operative thing being a good stunt.
Oh, yes. and those are few and far between. I mean, other than the promotional power ring stunt, which for me worked, I don't know if it worked as well for you, I think it did. Name any other stunt that you really thought was just brilliant, clever, and repeatable. And even the Power Ring stunt, I don't think, is repeatable.
Well, I mean, it sold those issues, but, you know, you get like the issue of, you know, Rebels, for instance, which was a great series, and, you know, the Power Ring issue did way better than the surrounding issues. So, you know, people would go in to get that thing, but they weren't sticking around. And, you know, I thought that was a good series.
I thought it was a very fun series. I enjoyed it a lot. I like most of what DC does.
I don't know if the people tried it out, read it, and didn't think it was good, or just got the issue to get the Power Ring and threw the comic out, you know, ran off with their Power Ring, or I don't know what.
It just, there's such a history of whatever a creator or publisher does to get somebody to try out a book, the likelihood of people staying on that book is really low. And until you get that reader retention, it doesn't matter if you relaunch, if you give away gold doubloons with the book for an issue. Are you going to keep people coming back?
And
you
might be up for a good gold doubloon. I don't know.
I'm not saying I'd pass it up, but would you come back for the next issue?
I think Aquaman should come with gold doubloons. It'd be like we're serving him fish and chips.
Could be. But it comes down to, is the goal to sell the title or the issue?
Yeah.
And I take more of a long-term approach if you've got to sell the title. Now, certainly to do that, you got to sell individual issues. But if you're so focused on selling individual issues, and it seems like all of the marketing departments are, they miss the boat. I'm going to say that the new 52 tagline for the relaunch for DC was a mistake, because it already segregates all these miniseries into perceived second-class citizens, because they're not part of the new 52. You know, so I think that's, you know, in and of itself, unfortunate. Is it going to really deter sales for that? Probably not. But they should have, by including the number in that, they already influenced how people were looking at the relaunch. You know, and the minute right. It gets down to 51 titles, that's going to be a news story on Newsarama, CBR, The Beat, wherever. And understandably so.
Yeah, no. I can see it, you know. It just, the retention is the key, as you say. And 6 months from now, when we're looking at this, that's going to be the really interesting part. I mean, can they not fall into this losing 40% for issue number two and, you know, just being in a slow slide on everything from there? I mean, that'll be the devastating part. I mean, this is very strong, but how much retention can we get? And it's just, well, I don't want to say anymore. I mean, it's like, let's wait and see.
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm thinking, well, what could be done about that? And the idea that just occurred to me, and maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't, would be if the marketing group at DC or Marvel, I think it works less so at smaller companies, but if it were to be structured in parallel with editorial, to where you have a marketing hierarchy that has people assigned to particular titles and so forth, and is involved in the process to where they could actually be gearing upcoming marketing campaigns and how they write the solicits and all of that in line with the direction the books are going, and working in tandem with that, not to telegraph the direction, but to not be blindsided by it either, not to be pumping up this one book, oh, it's going to go away or whatever, you know? And to help steer the contents of the book in a more marketable, does this issue justify itself, does it promote the next issue mentality. And I'm not saying that we need to have stories written specifically geared towards marketing's desires, but I think that insight needs to be fed into the creative process better. Because I'm reading a lot of books that, yeah, I'm liking just fine. But if the next issue never came out, would I even notice? Too many cases, the answer is no, not really.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. Because, you know, and I'm certainly, you know, as I'm working on trimming my list down and I'm dropping stuff, and as I kind of go around and I look at what people are talking about and what kind of the buzz is and what it's not, you know, it seems to me like more and more people are not buying any book that they don't consider to be pretty much what we would call a 5 out of 5, or maybe like a strong 4 out of 5. You know, whereas there's a lot of books that you or I would get, and lately more so on you because I've been dropping a lot of my 3 out of 3s. But, you know, if it's just like an average comic, a lot of people are just, that's not good enough. And when, you know, if you look at it, you know, if you were only getting 20 or 25 comic books, you know, it's like there are enough books that are 5s to you, or strong 4 out of 5s, that every single one of those 25 would be a 5 or a strong 4 out of 5. And so I can't begrudge someone doing that, because, you know, heck, I would do the same thing. If I had to cut back to, you know, if I was only getting that many books, they would all be 5 out of 5 books pretty much.
Oh, totally, totally. I have a very different perspective on how I select the books I get versus, you know, the average person. No question about that. Skimming down this list, the first issue or first item on this list of the top 300 I did not get is at rank 107. Now, some people are going to hear that and say, well, do you really think everything above that was a 5 out of 5 book? No. I don't expect everything I read to be a 5 out of 5. I don't expect everything I read to be a 4 out of 5, or necessarily a 3 out of 5. Now, granted, if something's consistently at that 2 out of 5, I may not stay on my list that long. If it's that 1 out of 5, odds of me getting that next issue are really low. But I'm also willing to bet, particularly at Marvel and DC, which is where my main interests lie, anything that almost anybody would consider in those mainstream universes a 5 out of 5, a 4 out of 5, or a 3 out of 5, I have read. And in most cases, I have read every issue of that series. Now, granted, the long-term, you know, Superman, Batman's fantastic. The evergreens that go back 40, 50, 60 years, no, not all of them, obviously. But I expect every title to have ups and downs. There have been periods I have considered Daredevil to be a brilliant book. Others, it's like, well, it's just kind of there. Same with Thor. Same with Superman, with Wonder Woman, with every title. There are ups and downs. For me, when it's hitting that upswing, I'm going to be one of the first people on that book because, well, I've been on it through that downswing. When it's, you know, and it gives me the ability to be sure to be getting the best of the best, understanding what's going on in the best of the best, because it's not like, well, I've missed the last couple of arcs. I don't have the issue you had when we went over this week of the X-Men Regenesis of who are all of these characters. I know who they all are. I may not be able to know their names and remember all that because there's so damn many of them, but that's not to say I've considered everything in the X-Men franchise over the last couple of years 5 out of 5s, 4 out of 5s, or even 3 out of 5s. There have been a couple where they really needed some work here and there. But if something really turns me off, yeah, it goes off the list. But I have a very different perspective there. Comics are an area I actively indulge myself in. There are other people who indulge in other areas, you know, but there are certain areas of my life where I am so limited in my selection of options to be very frustrated with that. I have food allergies. There are certain things I just can't eat. There's not a single comic coming out in previews that I can't pre-order. So, it's like, what the hell? I'll get what I want. But it comes down to, what are your perspectives? What are your expectations? And if the comics aren't meeting them, whatever they may be, that's great. You know, don't get what you don't want. Don't get what you can't afford. I completely support that. But don't assume that the rationale you're using for picking what you get or rating what you rate to be the same across the board. Mike Myers, friend of the show, got a lot of respect for him. He's a hardcore comic book fan, no question about that. Personally, I think the way it seems he rates books, he gives a lot of things that 5 out of 5. It's not an issue of whether I agree any particular one deserves that or not, but I think just the number of 5 out of 5s he gives, to me, indicates that his threshold for what that means and my threshold for what that means don't match. And that's cool. I think that's great, actually, because I would be very disturbed if everybody reviewing comics across the board had the exact same criteria and threshold. And, well, then everybody gets, you know, the same rating. You read one review, why bother with anyone else's? But it shows a very different perspective on how he judges comics from how I judge comics. Neither is right or wrong, they're just different. But I look at these sales, And it seems like the average person is judging pretty harshly on a lot of these books. And in most cases, the consensus is not everybody thought it was worth getting that next issue. And that has to change.
Yeah.
So a couple of things low on the list. Favorite of the show, Atomic Robo, ranked 276, 4,456 comics. That's a crying shame. Good stuff. Usagi Yojimbo, really consistent title there, ranked 269.
On Usagi Yojimbo, anyone who likes Usagi Yojimbo, go out to the forum. I went to this exhibit in Los Angeles that's running until the end of October. At the Japanese American National Museum. That's this huge, well, it's a couple of rooms, but it's like the whole downstairs gallery is on Stan Sakai's Usagi Yojimbo. And I put some pictures up. They had a lot of original art, a lot of really cool stuff. But if you're a fan of it, even if you can't go, you might enjoy looking at that thread on the forum, because I did post a bunch of pictures from that exhibit up there. And I was,
yeah.
You know, I caught it at the very end, and I'm glad I did.
When did you find out about that?
I found out about it at Comic-Con, actually, because
okay.
Stan had little flyers on his – because it
You're
started
off the
in
hook,
July.
Then.
Yeah, I mean, he found – he had little flyers about it on his table at Comic-Con. And, you know, I picked one of them up, and I've had it laying on, you know, on my counter for the last several months, and I was cleaning up and I like moved something and there it was, and I'm like, oh darn, this thing's it's over in a few weeks, we'd better go.
I would be giving you a very hard time if you had known about it before Comic-Con, specifically while I was staying at your house before Comic-Con.
I hadn't actually heard about it, because, you know, no, that would have been something we could have driven up for easily. It would have been really fun.
That's something
do,
I think we could have dragged my sister to.
Yeah. But
not
I found
because
out
she's
about
a Stan
it.
Sakai yeah. fan, but yeah. because we have cousins in Japan.
Yeah, but I found out about it at Con.
Yeah.
Very nice museum. I mean, we went upstairs and, you know, just looked through the whole museum. It's in Little Tokyo area of downtown L.A. Highly recommend it, though.
The question I had about that is, looking at some of those photos, it looks like he had all of the art for at least certain issues.
I don't know that he actually sells his original art. I mean, that's the thing, because I buy original art all the time, and I don't really see his pages for sale, and just the quantity of art he had there. I mean, there were certain showcases where there was just like, you know, 6 or 8 inch high stack of originals that are kind of fanned out a little bit of, you know, like several hundred pages.
Yeah, here's this trade.
Yeah.
It's like, damn.
You know, it's like, it's all there.
You know, I've got all of the trades that pick up after that two-volume hardcover set. I've got the two-volume hardcover set. I really need to find the time to start going through there because
I actually, when I came home from that exhibit, I went onto Amazon and I bought that two-volume hardcover set. So, I mean, even though I have the trades, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this in hardcover.
We need to think about the possibility of doing that as a back issue spotlight then. Because not all of it, obviously, that would be way, way too much. But something, maybe as a publisher spotlight or a title spotlight or something, just to kind of cover the Usagi stuff. Because I'm getting it on a monthly basis. I started picking it up a year or two back. I forget what it was that kicked me over into that. I'd been hearing great things about it for decades. Very late comer to that title, and I'm really enjoying it. And it's very consistent. It's if you like one issue, you're going to like the whole damn run.
Yeah. The one thing I really liked, I mean, I liked so many things at the exhibit, but he had this big, you know, he does for the trade paperbacks, the covers of them are usually like a painting. And the first one I ever bought when I first got into it was, I think, Volume 4. It was the Dragon Bellow Conspiracy. And, you know, so that was, you know, the first trade that I ever bought, because I bought it in trade for a long time before I switched to monthly issues, and I would just get the trade every, you know, 6 or 8 months when it came out. But that was my first one, and I had gone back then and I had bought all the previous trades and, you know, all that, and there was the original painting, you know, for that, you know, it was very large, nice oil painting hanging on the wall there, and it was just, just being able to see that stuff up close is so nice. And then there was another run, I think I put pictures of this up too, where there was one story that he, I guess he did the pencils on it, and then he did watercolor painting. You know, he painted the story, but then Sergio inked it for a more standard kind, but he didn't ink it in Sergio style. I mean, he followed Stan's pencils. So it looks a lot like Stan's work, but it was inked by Sergio, and they had a whole row of probably, you know, 15 or 20 of these along the wall where they had the watercolor painted page and then the inked page, you know, which there's a very much softer and it was slightly different. There was different amounts of detail, but it was the same story.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
Going along, and it was really, really cool to look at. A fascinating exhibit. I'm so glad I went and saw it while it was there.
This is where you're lucky I'm no longer living in San Diego, because if I had and found out you'd gone without me, I'd be giving you a hard time, too. I'd have driven up for that. That sounds like a really fun exhibit. Stan Sakai came to Staple, not this year but last, which is a really tiny convention here in town in Austin. And I listened to him speak and stuff, and he was just telling just stories about how he'd done stuff and answered questions. He's a really cool guy. And he's doing a great book. And every time I see it down here near the bottom of the list, and it's pretty consistent as to how it does. It fluctuates a little here and there, but it's not getting... I've got to imagine there's more readers out there that would be liking it than are trying it. And then the question comes down to, is it not getting into enough stores? Are there people like me who'd heard about it but didn't have anything to kick them off the fence to actually go buy it and try it? You know, where is the sales funnel not working? Where do people get stuck in that process? Because I think if somebody could figure out that for most books or what's common across different titles and stuff, they could actually, I mean, once you've identified the problem, you can actually start to fix the problem. And I don't know that anyone is really looking at that as to, yeah, sales are going down, but why? And that's a big task. That would involve, you know, certainly a lot of retailer participation. And it's something that, you know, an organization like Comics Pro ought to be actively investigating of, you know, why aren't readers buying other things than what they are?
Mm-hmm.
And why do they stop getting what they are? Because, you know, a lot of what we tend to look at this part of the list may not be able to look at next month because it may not be there.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many good things that I always see down in the bottom 50. I mean, another one, Gladstone's School for World Conquerors.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great all ages story. It's fun. It's well written. It's all ages in every sense of the word, meaning it is absolutely not written down to or kiddified, but it's something that a kid could enjoy as well as an adult. And the same thing with Atomic Robo. You know, these are phenomenal series, and, you know, they're down around 4,000 copies ish. Just not as many people are trying them out. They don't have the opportunity to try them out. Maybe the stores don't carry them or, you know, for whatever reason. But, boy, there's some really good quality stuff down there.
Well, there's quite a few things down here that I think maybe comic books isn't the right venue for telling these stories. Because I look at all the executive assistant titles down here, Orchid, Lotus, Violet, and stuff, and think, well, you know, this is, again, something that as a movie, as a TV show, I think would do really well. Executive Assistant Iris is ranked 255, so that's even within the top 50. Yeah.
Now, they're going to make an ongoing series of that in 2012, and there'll just be one.
And that
makes
sense.
I think will do better, because I think maybe just... And I had this initial reaction also. You know, it's I liked Executive Assistant Iris just fine, and then it's like, okay, now there's three more series, and I was like, yikes, you know, do I really want to read four of these in a month? I really enjoyed all of them for different reasons on each one. I thought they were all very well done.
But were you reading it before the hit list agenda?
Right, and I wasn't.
Neither was I, and because they did that and that gave it enough of a marketing push, I gave it a shot. I'll be with it for the ongoing. But if you were to take that same property and try it as a TV show, even if it only lasts a couple of episodes, you've still gotten to more people than this will probably ever get as a comic. And that, to me, that's just very unfortunate, because there's some really great stuff here, and this goes back to, again, what I was mentioning earlier. What percentage of stores are even getting copies of some of these things? And if we were to look through and have that percentage of number of stores or accounts that stuff went to, and we were to notice 100% at the top, 2% or whatever at the bottom, and a very straight line progression, problem solved, or identified at the very least. Retailers are the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Whether they're doing it right or wrong reasons is another matter, but that's where the problem would be.
Yeah. And you know, you look on the internet, which again is a kind of skewed window onto things. You know, we're here. I'll admit it, you know, but
but we're right. No, I'm kidding.
But, you know, things like Scalped and Northlanders. I mean, I just hear universally positive things from people who are reading those. I mean, it's the people who like that kind of stuff find it, right? And I read those, and I think they're very well done from Vertigo. But, you know, they're down around 6,000, you know, like what Scalped is 6,270.
Well, let's use DMZ for a second, because 5,544. That's pretty low for monthly unit sales. But man, when we look at that thing at the trade paperback side, that's a juggernaut. And now, is it big visible sales? No, but man, when I've cracked the crunch of the numbers for the year-end stuff, compared how it ranked to what showed up on the list and stuff like that, this is one of those sleeper hits that's been flying under the radar. And to me, that implies if more people knew about it, it would sell better. It's apparently really good stuff because there's a very strong audience for it.
Yeah.
So where is the sales funnel failing?
Yeah. I mean, and I'll tell you, I'll give you a good example because it's applicable recently to me. Down at slot 267, you got Optic Nerve by Adrian Tomine.
It's actually ranked 265.
265. Sorry. I was looking at the row number, not the...
You always Silly,
I always do that, sorry. Anyway, so 265, robbing them of their righteous one slot of
two
sales.
Slots, but okay.
damn you. So, anyway, selling $49.74. I actually saw this on the rack at the local shop, you know, and he gets a lot of indie books, but he doesn't get that many of this. I think he had two copies of it, and you know, it was there on Wednesday when I got in. I flipped through it. It looked pretty good, and I go, oh, I've never really tried this before. Let me buy this, and I'll read it. I loved it. I don't think I had ever seen a copy of Optic Nerve on the rack in any shop I've gone to.
I've seen it in some shops.
You know, but I mean, it's just, I personally, I don't recall having seen it. And I've been picking up back issues from, you know, various places online since then. And as I get them, I've been reading them, and they're great. I really like the series, but well, it's not like something that's been sitting around that I've had the option to buy.
Well, I'm going to partially disagree with that, because I think it's a signal-to-noise ratio. I am almost willing to bet that, like, Austin Books here in town has always had copies of that available. I know you've been into Austin Books. I'm not going to say you spotted it there or anything of the sort, but it's not to say it was completely unavailable to you. But, however, in most of these comic stores, there's so much stuff screaming for attention that it's easy for the stuff to get lost or just not noticed. Hell, even if you're looking straight at it. I mean, that's a persistent problem I have at Austin Books with the way they rack books, is I can't find stuff.
Well, I know at my shop, and, you know, I've looked around, and I think that there's a lot of shops that just wouldn't carry this book.
Oh, and I completely agree with you. I think the majority of shops probably would not.
And mine, I think he consistently buys probably two copies over the, you know, the pull or something, and they're just, maybe they get bought before I get there or something. But I usually look at his indie books to see things that catch my eye. I mean, it's not, you know, the random indie book section is not that big.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, because
this doesn't come out that often either, though.
No, it's like quarterly or something at best. It brings up an interesting point, though, because these are sales we're looking at into comic book stores. There's always the question of, well, what's the sell-through? What percentage of these, what number of these actually go to end readers? I would love to know that number. However, in addition to that, what I'm hearing out of this that would also be good that I hadn't really fully considered is I would like to know how many of those, 4,974 units of optic nerve number 12 got, I mean, obviously those all got into stores. How many of those sold, but how many were essentially pre-sold through a pull system? And knowing that kind of percentage for all of these items would also be very indicative of how things are doing. If the majority of stuff down at this end of the list, the bottom of the list, is stuff that's predominantly being sold through pull list or, hey, I know somebody wants it versus I'm going to put it on the rack and try my chances, that would tell us what, explain a lot of why some of these just don't have quote-unquote reader retention. And I put quotes around that because really, the sales retention is a factor of readers coming and going. It's not just, hey, fewer people bought this than the previous one, but, some of the people who leave are compensated for by people who come in, some of those who come in compensated for by those who leave or whatever. And you're not going to have people coming in on a title you don't put on the rack. It goes back to Brian Hibbs is not going to stock Avenging Spider-Man because it's got the code for the digital copy in it. He's only going to carry enough for his pull list customers. Understandable decision, but that means somebody just looking in isn't just going to see it and give it a tryout, which is why he's not putting it on the rack. He wants people who explicitly already know about it and want it to fill those needs, but not to be kind of pushing the envelope and trying to expand the readership that would then potentially go digital. So there's a lot of information that the point of sales systems at a lot of stores in combination with whatever system they're using for pull list, which may or may not be their same point of sale system, could really shine a very interesting spotlight on certain aspects of these comics that we simply can't tell from the data we have available and could go a long way towards explaining why there's this consistent downward trend on books and potentially identify a couple of easy things that could be done to reverse that trend. But alas, such information is not available to myself. I'm more than willing to help number crunch and stuff on that, offer my services up for such projects, but I have yet to be really get any kind of acceptance of that offer, and I've made it a couple of times to people at Comics Pro and so forth. So until they're ready to start doing such a thing, it's probably not going to get done. Let's see, over half the items on the list were $299, 151 items, actually. 113 were the $399 price point. We had 26 items at $3.50. Those three things account for 96.67% of the items on the list.
Wow.
So we had a single item at $1, another item at $2.95, another item at $3.95, five items at $4.99, a single item at $5.95, and another item at $7.99. So strong consolidation this time around on the price points. A lot of that, obviously, Marvel and DC tending to favor the $2.99, $3.99 price points. Boom, Dynamite, $3.99. A couple of things I would imagine most would be Image for the 350 items. So, although one or two I think are Marvel. So very, very few price points in play this time around. Actually, Dark Horse had quite a few of the 350 items. Image had one or two, actually quite a few, and Aspen. So we've had times in the past where it seemed like there were just so many different price points to be had. It was a little ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of an odd month for comparing previous issues because since we had 51 new items just from DC, I had 103 items that I couldn't find a previous issue for. Because I do it within a series. I'm not looking at Batman across all titles and stuff. And that's on purpose. That gets kind of dicey because then if you've got one thing that spun out two titles, you pull them back to the same reference. How do you do that, etc.? 164 items sold less than the previous issue, so that's over half the list. Only 24 items had an upswing. That's only about 8% of the list. Net gains and losses compared to previous issues is 240, 3,679 units down. That includes things that had multiple issues come out this month, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's interesting, I think. For me, the focus has always been more on how do titles trend versus how do months trend. Because, again, the months are going to be skewed by how many weeks are in the month, what came out that month, etc. Whereas titles, it seems like always that number one is the high water mark, and then it just slides from there. So I'd really like to see that net gain-loss thing get down to a zero or up to a zero and maybe a positive number indicating there's at least an equilibrium and possibly an upswing overall on comics. Don't expect to see it, but I'd like to. One other quick thing on some number two issues. We had Infinite number two come out at rank 143. That dropped 46.84%. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ongoing from IDW number two came out, 19,333 units, down 44.45%. So another two number twos that had about a 45% drop. So while the average second issue sells 80% of the first, those that drop sometimes are dropping really harsh these days.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to see next month's numbers. Going to be very, very interesting, particularly on the DC side. See how that squeezes out maybe some of the other publishers and how Marvel does.
Yeah, the whole second printing thing is going to be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Now, in past months, people might have said, but, you know, Diamond's not the only game in town. There are other distributors. One of those other distributors, which was pretty much almost the only other one doing any kind of noticeable business, more on the back half of previews equivalent side of things, was Haven. Haven is shutting down at the end of October. So by the time this episode goes up, they will have essentially a week left before they've shut down. Sorry to see them go. I had always hoped to get sales information out of them to be adding into this. That never happened for a variety of reasons, which is unfortunate, and I'm sorry to see them go, but I think the reality is dealing with a second distributor is more of a hassle than I think a lot of retailers felt it was worth. And that ultimately, I think, was their downfall in terms of, you know, between that and how many exclusive deals Diamond has, it's too much trouble, too little gain.
Yeah, so. And I know I have physically talked to retailers who told me flat out that, you know, that they didn't want to deal with ordering from a second distributor, you know. So when I've asked them about Haven, you know, and it's like, well, you can get these comics that you can't otherwise get from them. And they're like, I think one of the ones was when Cursed Pirate Girl was having some distribution problems through Diamond. They're like, you know, it's really not worth my trouble to deal with, you know, for the amount that I would sell. And, you know, there's got to be a, you know, profit loss for a business person. I understand that, you know, if it's going to take them X number of hours to, you know, set up an account and maintain it and do the orders and all that kind of stuff versus, you know, they think that, you know, they're only going to make, you know, an extra $10 or $20 or something, it, you know, could very well not be worth their trouble.
Yeah. That's the way business works. And if, you know, we want to see sales do better and stuff, or business practices change, there's got to be a business reason to do so.
Right.
So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.